her. His face so white that the blood splattered on it stood out even more starkly.
Close it.
I can't, Selena breathed. Dorian gripped the wall to keep himself from falling to his knees from the ache in his head. He made it to where they were positioned in front of the portal, Fleetfoot nuzzling Selena.
They're going to keep coming through, Kaol panted.
Something was wrong, Dorian realized. Something was wrong between them. Kaol wasn't touching her, wasn't helping her up. Beyond the crater inside the portal, the roaring was growing louder. No doubt those things would find some way to get through.
I'm drained. I don't have anything left to close this gate.
Selena winced, then lifted her eyes to Dorian's.
But you do.
From the corner of her eye, Selena saw Kaol whirl to face Dorian. She staggered to her feet. Fleetfoot had again put herself between Selena and the portal, snarling softly.
Help me,
she whispered to the prince, some semblance of energy returning. Dorian didn't look at Kaol. He stepped forward.
What must I do?
I need your blood. The rest I can do, at least I hope I can.
Kaol started to object, but Selena gave him a faint, bitter smile.
Don't worry, only a cut on the arm.
Sheathing his sword, Dorian rolled up the sleeve of his shirt and drew a dagger. Blood welled from the cut, quick and bright. Kaol growled,
How did you learn to open a portal?
I found a book, she said.
It was the truth.
I wanted to speak to Nehemia.
Silence fell. Pitying, horrifying silence. But then she added,
I think I accidentally changed a symbol.
She pointed to the word mark she'd smeared, the one that had rearranged itself.
It went to the wrong place, but this might close the door, if we're lucky.
What she didn't tell them was that there was a good chance it wouldn't work. But because there were no other books in her rooms, and because Archer had taken The Walking Dead with him, all she had left was that sealing spell she'd used on the door in the library. And there was no way, no way in hell she was going to abandon this open portal, or leave one of them to guard it. The portal would eventually close on its own, but she didn't know when. More of those things could creep through at any time. So she'd try this, because it was her only option. She'd figure out something else if it didn't work. It will work, she told herself. Dorian put a warm, reassuring hand on her back as she dipped her fingers into his blood. She hadn't realized how freezing her hands were until the heat of his blood warmed her fingertips. One by one, she drew the sealing marks over the green glowing symbols. Dorian never let go of her, only stepped even closer when she swayed. Kaol said nothing. Her knees buckled, but she finished covering the symbols with Dorian's blood. A lingering roar echoed through the damned world as the final symbol flared, the mists and rock and ravine fading into black, then into familiar stone. Selena kept her breathing steady, throwing all her focus into that. If she could keep breathing, she wouldn't fall apart. Dorian lowered his arm and loosed a sigh, finally letting go of her.
Let's go,
Kaol ordered, scooping up Fleetfoot, who whined in pain and gave him a warning growl.
I think we all need a drink, Dorian said quietly. And an explanation.
But Selena looked down the hall, to the stairwell where Archer had fled.
Had it only been minutes ago?
It had felt like a lifetime. But if it had only been minutes... Her breathing stumbled. She had discovered only one way out of the castle, and she was certain that was where Archer had gone. After what he'd done to Nehemia, after taking the book and abandoning them to that creature. Exhaustion was replaced by familiar anger. Anger that burned through everything, just as Archer had destroyed what she loved. Kaol stepped into her path.
Don't you even think...
Panting, she sheathed Damaris. He's mine! Before Kaol could grab her, she hurtled down the stairs. Chapter 51 Though Selena's fey senses were extinguished, she could swear she still smelled Archer's cologne as she moved toward the sewer tunnel, still smelled the blood on him.
He had destroyed everything. He'd had Nehemia assassinated, had manipulated them both, had used Nehemia's death to drive a wedge between her and Kaol, all in the name of power and revenge. She would take him apart, slowly.
"I know what you are," he'd said.
She didn't know what Arobin had told him about her heritage, but Archer had no idea what sort of darkness lurked inside her, or what sort of monster she was willing to become in order to make things right. Ahead of her, she could hear muffled curses and banging against metal. By the time she reached the sewer tunnel, she knew what had happened. The grate had slid shut, and none of Archer's attempts to open it had worked. Perhaps the gods did listen sometimes. Selena smiled, drawing both of her daggers. She walked through the archway, but the passage was empty on either side of the small river. She stepped farther onto the walkway, peering into the water, wondering if he'd tried to swim deep enough to go under the grate. She sensed him a heartbeat before he attacked from behind. She met his sword with both her daggers raised over her head, darting back to give herself enough time to assess. Archer had trained with the assassins, and from the way he wielded his blade, coming after her again and again, she knew he'd kept up those lessons. She was exhausted. Archer was at full strength, and his blows made her arms quake. He swiped for her throat, but she ducked, slicing for his side. Swift as lightning, he leapt to avoid her gutting him.
"I killed her for our sake," Archer panted as she scanned for any weakness, any opening. "She would have ruined us. And now that you can open portals without the keys, think of what we could do. Think, Selena. Her death was a worthy sacrifice to keep her from destroying the cause. We must rise up against the king."
She lunged, feinting left, but he caught the attack. She growled,
"I would rather live in his shadow than in a world where men like you rule. And when I'm done with you, I'm going to find all your friends and return the favor." "They don't know anything. They don't know what I know," he said, dancing past all her attacks with maddening ease. "Nehemia was hiding something else about you. She didn't want you involved, and I thought it was just because she didn't want to share you with us. But now I wonder why, exactly. What more did she know?"
Selena laughed softly. "You're a fool if you think I'll help you."
"Oh, once my men start working on you, you'll soon change your mind. Rourke Farron was a client of mine, before he was killed, that is. You remember Farron, don't you? He had a special love for pain. He told me that torturing Sam Cortland was the most fun he ever had."
She could hardly see through the bloodlust that seized her in that moment, hardly remember her own name. Archer fainted toward the river to get her to return to the wall, where she would impale herself on his blade. But Selena knew that move too, knew it because she herself had taught it to him all those years ago. So as he struck, she ducked past his guard and rammed the pommel of her dagger up into his jaw. He dropped like a stone, sword clattering, and she was upon him before he'd finished falling, her dagger at his throat.
"Please," he whispered hoarsely.
She pushed the edge of the blade into his skin, wondering how she could make this last without killing him too quickly.
"Please," he begged, chest heaving. "I'm doing it for our freedom. Our freedom. We're on the same side in the end."
One flick of the wrist, and she could slit his throat. Or she could disable him the way she'd disabled Grave. She could give him the injuries Grave had given Nehemia. She smiled.
"You're not a murderer," he whispered.
"Oh, I am," she purred, torchlight dancing on the dagger as she considered what to do with him.
"Nehemia wouldn't want this. She wouldn't want you to do this."
And though she knew she shouldn't listen, the word struck home.
"Don't let that light go out."
The darkness that thrived in her soul had no light left. No light, save for a kernel. A faint flicker that grew smaller by the day. Wherever she was now, Nehemia knew how small the flame had become.
"Don't let that light go out."
Selena felt the tension go out of her body, but she kept her dagger on Archer's throat until she was on her feet. You're leaving Rifthold tonight, she told him. You and all of your friends.
Thank you, Archer breathed, standing. If I find out you're still in the city at dawn, she said, putting her back to him as she stalked toward the tunnel stairs, I'll kill you.
Enough. It was enough.
Thank you, Archer said again.
She kept walking, listening for any sign of him moving to attack her back.
I knew you were a good woman, he said.
Selena halted, turned.
There was a hint of triumph in his eyes. He thought he'd won, manipulated her again. One foot after another, she walked back toward him with predatory calmness.
She stopped, close enough to kiss him.
He gave her a wary smile.
No, I'm not, she said.
Then she moved, too fast for him to stand a chance.
Archer's eyes went wide as she slid the dagger home, jamming it up into his heart. He sagged in her arms. She brought her mouth to his ear, holding him upright with one hand and twisting the dagger with the other as she whispered, But Nehemia was.
Chapter 52 Kaol watched blood bubble out of Archer's lips as Selena let him slump to the stone floor. She stared down at the body, her final words to him hovering in the air, running claws over Kaol's already chilled skin. She closed her eyes, tilting her head back as she took a long breath, as if she were embracing the death before her, and the stain it left as payment for her vengeance. He had arrived in time to hear Archer beg for his life, and utter the words that had been his last mistake. Kaol shifted his boot against the step to warn her that he was there. How much of her fey senses did she retain when she looked like a human? Archer's blood spread across the dark stones, and Selena opened her eyes as she slowly turned to Kaol. The blood had soaked the ends of her hair, turning them a brilliant red. And her eyes? There was nothing there, as though she'd been hollowed out. For a heartbeat, he wondered if she would kill him, too, just for being there, for seeing the dark truth of her. She blinked, and the killing calm in her eyes vanished, replaced only by bone-deep weariness and sorrow. An invisible burden that he couldn't begin to imagine made her shoulders slump. She picked up the black book that Archer had dropped on the damp stones, but let it dangle from her fingers, as if it were a piece of dirty clothing.
I owe you an explanation, was all she said.
Selena refused to let the healer look at her until Fleetfoot's leg had been fixed. It was only a long scratch, but it was deep. Selena had held Fleetfoot's head in her arms as the thrashing dog was forced to swallow water laced with a sedative. Dorian helped as best he could while the healer worked on the dog lying unconscious on Selena's dining room table. Kaol leaned against the wall of the room, arms crossed over his chest. He said nothing to Dorian since they'd gone down into the passageway. The young, brown-haired healer didn't ask any questions either. Once Fleetfoot was patched up and moved to Selena's bed, Dorian insisted Selena get her head looked at. But Selena waved him off and told the healer that if she didn't inspect the crown prince first, she'd report her to the king. Scowling, Dorian let the woman clean the small wound on his temple, received when Selena had knocked him out cold. Considering how bloody Selena and Kaol were, he felt utterly ridiculous, even if his head still pounded. The healer finished with him, giving him a timid, slightly concerned smile. And when it was time to decide who should be looked at next, the glaring contest between Kaol and Selena was one for the ages. At last, Kaol just shook his head and slumped into the seat that Dorian had recently vacated. He had blood everywhere, and ended up peeling off his tunic and shirt so the healer could cleanse his minor wounds. Despite the scratches and cuts, the abrasions on his hands and knees, the healer still asked no questions, her pretty face an unreadable professional mask. Selena turned to Dorian, her voice quiet.
I'll come to your rooms when I'm done here.
From the corner of his eye, he sensed Kaol stiffening, and Dorian bit down on his surge of jealousy as he realized he was being dismissed. The captain was making a good show of not looking at them. What had happened during the time he'd blacked out? and what had happened when she'd gone to kill Archer.
Fine, Dorian said, and thanked the healer for her help.
At least he now had time to piece himself together, to sort through all that had happened in the last few hours, and to plan how to explain his magic to Kaol. But even as he walked out of the dining room, part of him realized that his magic, that he, was the least of their concerns. Because even from that first day in Endovir, this had always been about them.
Selena didn't need a healer to look at her head. When the magic had taken her over, it had somehow healed everything. All that was left of her wounds now were bloodstains and torn clothing. And exhaustion. Utter exhaustion.
I'm taking a bath, she told Kaol, who still sat shirtless under the healer's ministrations.
She needed to wash Archer's blood off her.
She shucked off her clothing and bathed, scrubbing herself until her skin hurt, washing her hair twice. When she emerged, she slipped into a clean tunic and pants, and just as she finished combing out her dripping hair, Kaol walked into her bedroom and sat at the chair before her desk. The healer gone, he'd put his shirt back on, and she could see the white bandages peeking through the rips in the dark cloth. Selena checked on Fleetfoot, who was still unconscious on the bed, and then walked to the balcony doors. She studied the night sky for a long moment, seeking out a familiar constellation. The Stag, the Lord of the North. She took a long breath.
My great-grandmother was Fae, she said.
And even though my mother couldn't switch into an animal form the way the Fae can, I somehow inherited the ability to shift between my fae form and my human form.
And you can't shift anymore?
She looked over her shoulder at him. When magic stopped 10 years ago, I lost my ability. It's what saved my life, I think. As a child, when I was scared or upset or had tantrums, I couldn't control the shift. I was learning to master it, but I would have given myself away at some point.
But in that other world, you could...
She turned to face him, seeing the haunted gleam in his eyes.
Yes, in that world, magic, or something like it, still exists.
And it is just as awful and overwhelming as I remembered. She eased onto the edge of her bed, the distance between them feeling like leagues. I had no control over it, over the shift, or the magic, or myself. I was as likely to hurt you as I was to hurt that creature. She closed her eyes, her hands shaking a bit.
So you did open a portal to another world. How?
All those books I've been reading on the word marks. They had spells to open temporary portals. And then she explained about finding the passage on Samhuin, and the tomb, and Elena's command to become the champion, and what Cain had been doing and how she had killed him, and how tonight she had wanted to open a portal to see Nehemia. She left out the word keys, the king, and what she suspected he might be doing with Caltaine and Roland. When she finished, Kaol said,
I would say you're insane, except I have the blood of that creature on me, and went into that world myself.
If anyone knew, not just about the spells to open portals, but about what I am, she said wearily, you understand that I would be executed.
His eyes flashed. I'm not going to tell anyone. I swear it.
She bit her lip, nodding, and walked back to the window. Archer told me that he was the one who had Nehemia assassinated, because she was a threat to his control over the group. He posed as Councilman Mullison and hired Grave. He kidnapped you to lure me away. He planted that anonymous threat against her life, too, because he wanted me to blame you for her death. Kaol swore, but she kept gazing out the window, kept looking at that constellation.
But even though I know you're not responsible, she said softly, I still...
She found his face full of anguish.
You still can't trust me, he finished.
She nodded. In this, she knew Archer had won and hated him for it.
When I look at you, she whispered,
all I want to do is touch you.
But what happened that night? I don't know if I can ever forget it.
The deepest cut on his cheek had scabbed, and she knew it would scar.
For my part, I am sorry for what I did to you.
He stood, wincing at his wounds, and walked over to her.
We both made mistakes, he said in that voice that made her heart stumble.
She found the nerve to turn to him, gazing up into his face. How can you still look at me like that when you know what I truly am?
His fingers grazed her cheeks, warming her chilled skin. Faye, assassin, no matter what you are, I...
Don't! She stepped back. Don't say it! She couldn't give him everything again. Not now. It wouldn't be fair to either of them. Even if she ever learned to forgive him for picking the king over Nehemia, her journey to find the word keys would require her to go far away, to a place where she would never ask him to follow. I need to prepare Archer's body to present to the king, she got out. Before he could say anything else, she picked up Damaris from where she'd dropped it by the door and vanished into the passage. She waited until she was deep inside before she let the tears start flowing. Kael stared at where she had gone and wondered if he should follow her into that ancient darkness. But he thought of all that she'd told him, all the secrets she'd revealed, and knew he needed time to comprehend it all. He could tell that she had left out information. She'd only told him the vaguest details, and then there was the matter of her fey heritage. He'd never heard of anyone inheriting their powers in such a throwback way. But then again, no one spoke of the fey nowadays. It explained how she knew the ancient dirges. With a gentle pat on Fleetfoot's head, he left the room. The halls were empty and silent. And Dorian, she had acted like Dorian had some power too. There had been the moment when the creature was blasted away by an invisible wall. But it was impossible for Dorian to have power. How could he, when Selena's own magic, had disappeared as soon as she returned to this world? Selena was fey, and heir to a power she couldn't control. Even if she couldn't shift, if anyone ever discovered what she was. It explained why she was so terrified of the king, why she never said anything about where she'd come from or what she'd been through. And living here, this was the most dangerous place for her, or any fey, to be. If someone found out what she was, they could use that information against her, or have her killed. And there would be nothing he could do to save her. No lie he could tell, no strings he could pull. How long before someone else went digging into her past? How long before someone decided to go right to Erobin Hamel and torture him for the truth? Kaol's feet knew where he was going long before he'd made the choice, formed the plan. Minutes later, he found himself knocking on a wooden door. His father's eyes were bleary with sleep, and they narrowed as they saw him. Do you know what time it is? He didn't, and he didn't care. Kael shouldered his way into the room and shut the door, scanning the dimness for any other people. I have a favor to ask you, but before I do, promise you won't ask any questions. His father gave him a slightly bemused look, then crossed his arms. No questions. Make your request. Beyond the window, the sky was beginning to lighten into a softer shade of black. I think that we should send the king's champion to Wendelin to dispatch the royal family. His father's brows rose. Kael went on. We've been at war with them for 2 years and have yet to break past their naval defenses. But if the king and his son are eliminated, we might stand a chance of getting through in the ensuing chaos, especially if the king's champion also gets her hands on their naval defense plans. He took a breath, keeping his voice disinterested. I want to present the idea to the king this morning, and I want you to support me. Because Dorian would never agree to it, not without knowing what Selena was. And Kael would never tell anyone, Dorian included. But with an idea this drastic, he'd need as much political muscle as he could get. An ambitious, ruthless plan. His father smiled. And if I support this idea and convince my allies on the council to support it too, then what can I expect in return? From the way his eyes gleamed, his father already knew the answer. Then I will go back to Aniel with you, Kael said. I will leave my position as captain and return home. It wasn't his home, not anymore. But if it meant getting Selena out of the country, Wendelin was the last stronghold of the Fae, and the one place in Aurelia where she'd be truly safe.
Whatever shred of hope he'd had for a future with her was gone. She still felt something for him, she'd admitted, but she would never trust him. She would always hate him for what he'd done. But he could do this for her. Even if he never saw her again, even if she abandoned her duties as King's champion and stayed with the Fae and Wendlin forever, as long as he knew that she was safe, that no one could hurt her, he'd sell his soul again and again for that. His father's eyes gleamed with triumph. Consider it done.
Chapter 53. When Celaena finished telling Dorian the story she'd told Kaol, albeit a much more limited version, he let out a long sigh and fell back onto his bed.
It sounds like something out of a book, he said, staring at the ceiling. She sat down on the other side of the bed.
Believe me, I thought I was going mad for a while.
So you actually opened a portal to another world, using these word marks?
She nodded.
You also knocked that creature aside like it was a leaf caught in a wind. Oh, she hadn't forgotten about that. Not for one moment had she forgotten what it meant for him to have such raw power.
That was dumb luck.
She watched him, this kind, clever prince of hers.
I still can't control it.
In the tomb, she said, there is someone who might offer you some advice on how to control it, who might have some information about the kind of power you've inherited.
Right then, though, she didn't exactly know how to explain more to him, so she just said,
someday soon, you and I could go down there and meet him.
Is he...
You'll see when we get there. If he deigns to speak to you, it might take a while for him to decide he likes you. After a moment, Dorian reached over and took her hand, bringing it to his lips for a swift kiss. Nothing romantic, a gesture of thanks.
Even though things are different between us now. I meant what I said after the duel with Cain. I will always be grateful that you came into my life.
Her throat tightened, and she squeezed his hand.
Nehemia had dreamed of a court that could change the world. A court where loyalty and honor were more valued than blind obedience and power. The day Nehemia had died, Celaena had thought the dream of that court forever vanished.
But looking at Dorian as he smiled at her, this prince, who was smart and thoughtful and kind, who inspired good men like Kaol to serve him. Celaena wondered if Nehemia's impossible, desperate dream of that court might yet come to pass. The real question now was whether his father knew what a threat his son posed.
The King of Otterlin had to give the captain credit. The plan was ruthless and bold, and would send a message not just to Wendlin, but to all their enemies. With the embargo between their countries, Wendlin refused to let Otterlanian men into their borders. But women and children seeking refuge could still enter. It made sending anyone else impossible, but his champion. The king looked down his council table, where the captain was waiting for his decision. Westfall's father and four others had immediately supported the idea. Another bit of unexpected cunning from the captain. He'd brought allies to this meeting. Dorian, however, was watching the captain with barely concealed surprise. Clearly, Westfall hadn't thought Dorian would support his decision. If only Westfall had been his heir instead. His warrior's mind was sharp, and he didn't balk from doing what needed to be done. The prince had yet to learn that kind of ruthlessness. Getting the assassin away from his son would be an unexpected benefit. He trusted the girl to do his dirty work, but he didn't want her around Dorian. She'd brought Archer Finn's head to him this morning, not a day later than she'd promised him, and explained what she'd discovered. That Archer had been responsible for Nehemia's assassination due to their mutual involvement in that traitorous society. He wasn't surprised that Nehemia was involved. But what would the assassin have to say about this journey?
Summon my champion, he said.
In the ensuing silence, the council members murmured to each other, and his son tried to catch Westfall's eye, but the captain avoided looking at the prince.
The king smiled slightly, twisting the black ring on his finger. A pity Parrington wasn't here to see this. He was off dealing with the slave uprising in Calicula.
news of which had been kept so secret that even the messengers had forfeited their lives. The Duke would have been greatly amused by today's turn of events. But he wished Parrington here for more important reasons, too, to help him find out who had opened a portal last night. He'd sensed it in his sleep, a sudden shift in the world. It was open for only a few minutes before someone closed it again. Cain was gone. Who else in this castle possessed that kind of knowledge or that power in the blood? Was it the same person who had killed Baba Yellowlegs? He put a hand on Nothung, his sword. There had been no body, but he didn't think for one moment that Yellowlegs had just disappeared. The morning after she'd vanished, he'd gone to the carnival himself to look at the ruined wagon. He'd seen the flecks of dark blood staining the wooden floor. Yellowlegs had been a queen among her people, one of the three brutal factions that had destroyed the Crokken family 500 years ago. They'd relished erasing much of the wisdom of the Crokken women who had ruled justly for 1,000 years. He'd invited the carnival here to meet with her, to purchase a few of her mirrors, and learn what remained of the Iron Teeth Alliance that had once been strong enough to rip apart the Witch Kingdom. But before she had yielded any decent information, she had died, and it frustrated him to not know why. Her blood had been spilled at his castle. Others might come to demand answers and retribution. If they came, he would be ready. Because in the shadows of the Farian Gap, he'd been breeding new mounts for his gathering armies, and his wyverns still needed riders. The doors to the council room opened. The assassin walked in, shoulders thrown back in that insufferable way of hers. She coolly took in the details of the room before stopping a few feet away from the table and bowing low. "Your Majesty summoned me?" She kept her eyes averted, as she usually did, except for that delightful day when she'd come in and practically flayed Mullison alive. Part of him wished he didn't now have to free the sniveling councilman from the dungeons. "Your companion, Captain Westfall, has come up with a rather unusual idea," the king said, and waved a hand at Kaol. "Why don't you explain, Captain?" The captain twisted in his chair, then rose to his feet to face her. "I have suggested that we send you to Wendlin to dispatch the king and his heir. While you are there, you will also seize their naval and military defense plans, so that once the country is in chaos, we will be able to navigate their impenetrable barrier reefs and take the country for ourselves." The assassin looked at him for a long moment, and the king noticed that his son had gone very, very still. Then she smiled, a cruel, twisted thing. "It would be an honor to serve the crown in such a way." He had never learned anything about the mark that had glowed on her head during the duel. The word mark was impossible to decipher. It either meant nameless or unnamed, or something akin to anonymous. But gods blessed or not, from the wicked grin on her face, the king knew she'd enjoy this task. "Perhaps we'll have some fun with it," the king mused. "Wendlin is having their solstice ball in a few months. What a message it would send if the king and his son were to meet their end right under the noses of their own court on their day of triumph." Though the captain shifted on his feet at the sudden change of plans, the assassin smiled at him again, dark glee written all over her. What hellhole had she come from to find delight in such things?
"A brilliant idea, Your Majesty."
"It's done, then," the king said, and they all looked at him. "You'll leave tomorrow."
"But," his son interrupted, "surely she needs some time to study Wendlin, to learn its ways, and—"
"It's a 2-week journey by sea," he said,
"and then she'll need time to infiltrate the castle in time for the ball. She can take whatever materials she needs and study them on board." Her brows had lifted slightly, but she just bowed her head. The captain was still standing, stiffer than usual, and his son was glaring at him and at the captain, so angry that he wondered whether he'd snap. But the king wasn't particularly interested in their petty dramas, not when this brilliant plan had arisen. He'd have to send riders immediately to the Farian Gap and the Dead Islands, and have General Narok ready his legion. He didn't mean to make mistakes with this one chance in Wendlin.
And it would be the perfect opportunity to test a few of the weapons he'd been forging in secret all these years. Tomorrow. She was leaving tomorrow. And Kaol had come up with the idea? But why? She wanted to demand answers, wanted to know what he was thinking when he'd come up with this plan. She'd never told him the truth about the king's threats, that he would execute Kaol if she didn't return from a mission, if she failed. And she could fake the deaths of petty lords and merchants, but not the king and crown prince of Wendlin. Not in 1,000 lifetimes could she find a way out of it. She paced and paced, knowing Kaol wouldn't be back in his rooms yet, and wound up going down to the tomb, if only to give herself something to do. She expected Mort to lecture her about the portal, which he did thoroughly, but she didn't expect to find Elena waiting for her inside the tomb. "You have enough power to appear to me now, but you couldn't help close the portal last night?" She took one look at the queen's frown and began pacing again. "I could not," Elena said. "Even now, this visit is draining me faster than it should." Selena scowled at her. "I can't go to Wendlin. I can't go. Kaol knows what I'm doing for you, so why would he make me go there?" "Take a breath," Elena said softly. Selena glared at her. "This ruins your plans, too. If I'm in Wendlin, then I can't deal with the word keys and the king. And even if I pretended to go and instead went questing across this continent, it wouldn't take long for the king to realize I'm not where I'm supposed to be." Elena crossed her arms. "If you are in Wendlin, then you will be near Doranel. I think that's why the captain wants you to go." Selena barked a laugh. Oh, what a tangled mess he'd gotten her into. "He wants me to go hide with the Fae and never come back to Otterlin? That's not going to happen. Not only will he be killed, but the word keys..." "You will sail to Wendlin tomorrow." Elena's eyes glowed bright. "Leave the word keys and the king for now. Go to Wendlin, and do what needs to be done." "Did you plant this idea in his head somehow?" "No. The captain is trying to save you the only way he knows how." Selena shook her head, looking at the sunlight pouring into the tomb from the shaft above. "Will you ever stop giving me commands?" Elena let out a soft laugh. "When you stop running from your past, I will." Selena rolled her eyes, then let her shoulders droop. A shard of memory sliced through her. "When I spoke to Nehemia, she mentioned that she knew her own fate, that she had embraced it, that it would set things in motion. Do you think she somehow manipulated Archer into..." But she couldn't finish saying it. Couldn't let herself voice what the horrible truth might be. That Nehemia had engineered her own death, knowing that she might change the world. Change Selena. More through dying than living. A cold, slender hand grasped hers. "Cast that thought into the far reaches of your mind. Knowing the truth, whatever it may be, will not change what you must do tomorrow. Where you must go." And even though Selena knew the truth in that moment, knew it just from Elena's refusal to answer at all, she did as the queen commanded. There would be other moments, other times to take out that truth to examine every dark and unforgiving facet. But right now, right now. Selena studied the light pouring into the tomb. Such a little light, holding the darkness at bay. Wendlin, then. Elena smiled grimly and squeezed her hand. Wendlin, then. Chapter 54. When the council meeting was over, Kaol did his best not to look at his father, who had been watching him so carefully while he'd announced his plans to the king, or at Dorian, whose sense of betrayal rippled off of him as the meeting went on. He tried to hurry back to the barracks, but he wasn't all that surprised when a hand clapped on his shoulder and turned him around. "Wendlin?" Dorian snarled. Kaol kept his face blank. "If she's capable of opening a portal like she did last night, then I think she needs to get out of the castle for a while. For all our sakes." Dorian couldn't know the truth. "She'll never forgive you for having her shipped off like that. to take down a whole country, and in such a public way, making a spectacle out of it. Are you mad? I don't need her forgiveness, and I don't want to worry about her letting in a horde of otherworldly creatures just because she's missing her friend. He hated each lie that came out of his mouth, but Dorian drank them up, his eyes seeming to glow with rage. This was the other sacrifice he'd have to make. Because if Dorian didn't hate him, if he didn't want Kaol gone, then leaving for N.E.L. would be that much more difficult.
If anything happens to her in Wendlin, Dorian growled, refusing to back down, I'll make you regret the day you were born.
If anything happened to her, Kaol was fairly certain he'd forever regret that day, too. But he just said, one of us has to start leading, Dorian, and stalked off. Dorian didn't follow him.
Dawn was just breaking as Selena arrived at Nehemia's grave. The last of the winter snows had melted, leaving the world barren and brown, waiting for spring. In a few hours, she'd set sail across the ocean. Selena dropped to her knees on the damp ground and bowed her head before the grave. Then she said the words she'd wanted to say to Nehemia last night, the words that she should have said from the beginning, words that wouldn't change, no matter what she learned about Nehemia's death.
I want you to know, she whispered to the wind,
to the earth, to the body far beneath her,
that you were right. You were right. I am a coward, and I have been running for so long that I've forgotten what it is to stand and fight.
She bowed deeper, putting her forehead against the dirt.
But I promise, she breathed into the soil. I promise that I will stop him. I promise that I will never forgive, never forget what they did to you. I promise that I will free Eowe. I promise that I will see your father's crown restored to his head.
She raised herself, drawing a dagger from her pocket, and sliced a line across her left palm. Blood welled, ruby bright against the golden dawn, sliding down the side of her hand before she pressed her palm to the earth.
I promise, she whispered again. On my name, on my life, even if it takes until my last breath, I promise I will see Eowe freed.
She let her blood soak into the ground, willing it to carry the words of her oath to the other world, where Nehemia was safe at last. From now on, there would be no other oaths but this, no other contracts, no other obligations.
Never forgive. Never forget.
And she didn't know how she would do it, or how long it would take, but she would see it through, because Nehemia couldn't. Because it was time. Chapter 55. The shattered lock on Selena's bedroom door still wasn't fixed by the time Dorian appeared after breakfast, a stack of books in his arms. She stood before her bed, stuffing clothing into a large leather satchel. Fleetfoot was the first to acknowledge him, though he had no doubt Selena heard him coming from the hallway. The dog limped to him, tail wagging, and Dorian set the books on the desk before kneeling on the plush rug. He ran his hands over Fleetfoot's head, letting her lick him a few times. The healer said her leg is going to be fine, Selena said, still focused on her satchel. Her left hand was bandaged, a wound he hadn't noticed last night. She just left a few minutes ago.
Good,
Dorian said, rising to his feet. She was wearing a heavy tunic and pants and a thick cloak. Her brown boots were sturdy and sensible, far more subdued than her usual attire. Traveling clothes.
Were you going to leave without saying goodbye?
I thought it would be easier this way, she said.
In 2 hours she would sail to Wendlin, that land of myths and monsters, a kingdom of dreams and nightmares made flesh. Dorian approached her.
This plan is madness. You don't have to go. We can convince my father to do something else. If they catch you in Wendlin,
they won't catch me.
There will be no help for you,
Dorian said, putting a hand on the satchel.
If you are captured, if you are hurt, You are beyond our reach. You will be entirely on your own.
I'll be fine.
But I won't be. Every day that you're there, I will wonder what has become of you. I won't forget you. Not for 1 hour.
Her throat bobbed, the only sign of emotion she allowed to show, and she looked toward her dog, watching them from the rug.
Will you?
He watched her swallow again before meeting his gaze. The gold in her eyes glowed in the morning sun.
Will you look after her while I'm gone?
He took her hand, squeezing.
As if she's one of my own. I'll even let her sleep in the bed.
She gave him a small smile, and he had a feeling that any greater sign of emotion would shatter her self-control. He waved a hand to the books he'd brought.
I hope you don't mind, but I need a place to store these, and your rooms might be safer than mine.
She glanced at the desk, but, to his relief, didn't go to it. The books he'd brought would only lead to more questions. Genealogies, royal chronicles, anything on how and why he might have magic.
Of course,
was all she said. I think the Walking Dead is still floating around here anyway. Maybe it'll be glad to have company. He might have smiled had it not been eerily true.
I'll leave you to your packing.
I have a council meeting at the same time your ship departs, he said, fighting the ache in his chest. It was a lie, and a bad one. But he didn't want to be at the docks, not when he knew someone else would be there to see her off.
So, I suppose this is goodbye.
He didn't know whether he was allowed to embrace her anymore, so he stuffed his hands into his pockets and gave her a smile.
Take care of yourself.
A faint nod. They were friends now, and he knew that the physical boundaries between them had been altered, but he turned away rather than let her see the disappointment he knew was all too clear on his face. He took all of 2 steps toward the door before she spoke, the words soft and strained.
Thank you for all that you have done for me, Dorian. Thank you for being my friend, for not being like the others.
He paused, turning to face her. She kept her chin high, but her eyes were gleaming.
I'll come back, she said quietly. I'll come back for you.
And he knew that there was more that she wasn't saying, some bigger meaning behind those words. But Dorian still believed her. The docks were crowded with sailors and slaves and workers loading and unloading cargo. The day was warm and breezy, the first hint of spring in the air, and the sky was cloudless. A good day for sailing. Selena stood before the ship that would carry her through the first leg of the journey. It would sail to a prearranged location, where a ship from Wendlin would meet it to take aboard refugees fleeing the shadow of Otterlin's empire. Most of the women traveling on her ship were already below decks. She shifted the fingers of her bandaged left hand, wincing at the dull pain radiating outward from her palm. She had hardly slept that night, holding Fleetfoot close to her instead. Saying goodbye an hour ago had been like ripping out a piece of her heart, but the dog's leg was still too injured for her to risk the journey to Wendlin. She hadn't wanted to see Kael, hadn't bothered saying goodbye, because she had so many questions for him that it was easier not to ask at all. Hadn't he known what an impossible trap he was setting for her now? The ship captain bellowed a 5-minute departure warning. The sailors started scrambling, doubling their efforts to prepare to leave the harbor and set out down the Avery, and then into the great ocean itself. To Wendlin. She swallowed hard. Do what needs to be done, Elena had told her. Did that mean actually killing the royal family of Wendlin, or something else? A salty breeze ruffled her hair, and she stepped forward. But someone emerged from the shadows of the buildings lining the docks.
Wait,
Kael said. Selena froze as he walked to her, and didn't move even when she found herself looking up into his face.
Do you understand why I did this?
He asked softly. She nodded, but said, I have to return here.
No,
he said, his eyes flashing. You, listen. She had 5 minutes. She couldn't explain it to him now. Couldn't explain that the king would kill him if she didn't return. That knowledge could be fatal to him. Even if he ran away, the king had threatened Nehemia's family, too. But she knew that Kaol was trying to protect her, and she couldn't leave him wholly ignorant. Because if she did die in Wendlin, if something happened to her... Listen carefully to what I am about to tell you. His brows rose, but she didn't give herself a moment to reconsider, to second-guess her decision. As succinctly as she could, she told him about the word keys. She told him about the word gates and about Baba Yellowlegs. She told him about the papers she'd stashed down in the tomb, the riddle with the locations of the three word keys. And then she told him that she knew the king had at least one, and that there was a dead creature sealed beneath the library, and that he should never open the door to the catacombs, never. And that Roland and Caltaine might be part of some bigger, deadlier plan. And when that horrible truth had been revealed, she unfastened the eye of Elena from her neck and folded it into his palm. Never take it off. It will protect you from harm. He was shaking his head, his face deathly pale. Selena, I can't... I don't care if you go looking for the keys, but someone has to know about them. Someone other than me. All the proof is in the tomb. Kaol grabbed her hand with his free one. Selena, listen, she repeated. If you hadn't convinced the king to send me away, we could have... figured them out together. But now... 2 minutes, the sea captain shouted. Kaol was just staring at her. Such grief and fear in his eyes that speech failed her. And then she did the most reckless thing she'd ever done in her life. She stood on her toes and whispered the words into his ear. The words that would make him understand. Understand why it was so important to her, and what it meant when she said she would return. And he would hate her forever for it, once he understood. "What does that mean?" he demanded. She smiled sadly.
You'll figure it out. And when you do,
she shook her head, knowing she shouldn't say it, but doing it anyway.
When you do, I want you to remember that it wouldn't have made any difference to me. It's never made any difference to me when it came to you. I'd still pick you. I'll always pick you.
Please, please just tell me what that means. But there was no time, so she shook her head and stepped back. Kaol took one step toward her, though. One step. Then he said,
I love you.
She strangled the sob that built in her throat.
I'm sorry, she said,
hoping he would remember those words later. Later, when he knew everything. Her legs found the strength to move. She took a breath, and with a final look at Kaol, she strode up the gangplank. Taking no notice of those on board, she set down her sack and took up a place by the railing. She looked down at the dock to find Kaol still standing by the walkway as it was lifted. The ship's captain called for them to cast off. Sailors scurried, ropes were untied, tossed and tied again, and the ship lurched. Her hands clasped the railing so hard they hurt. The ship began moving, and Kaol, the man she hated and loved so much that she could hardly think around him, just stood there, watching her go. The current grabbed the ship, and the city began to diminish. The ocean breeze soon caressed her neck. But she never stopped staring at Kaol. She stared toward him until the glass castle was a sparkling speck in the distance. She stared toward him until there was only gleaming ocean around her. She stared toward him until the sun dropped beyond the horizon, and a smattering of stars hung overhead. It was only when her eyelids drooped and she swayed on her feet that Selena stopped staring toward Kaol. The smell of salt filled her nostrils, so different from the salt of Endovir, and a spirited wind whipped through her hair. With a hiss through her teeth, Selena Sardothian turned her back on Otterlin and sailed toward Wendlin. Chapter 56 Kaol didn't understand what she'd told him. The words she'd whispered in his ear. It was a date. Not even a year attached to it. A month and a day. A date that had passed weeks and weeks ago. It was the day that Selena had left the city. The day she had snapped at Endovir a year before. The day her parents had died. He stayed on the docks long after the ship was out of the harbor, watching its sails become smaller and smaller as he mulled over the date again and again. Why had she told him everything about those word keys, but made this hint so obscure? What could possibly be more important than the horrible truth about the king he served? The word keys, while they terrified him, made sense. They explained so much. The king's great power, his journeys that ended with the whole party mysteriously dying, how Cain had become so strong. Even that time Kaol had looked at Parrington and seen his eyes darken so strangely. But when she'd told him, had she known what kind of choice she'd left him? And what could he possibly do about it from Aniel? Unless he could find a way out of the vow he'd made. He'd never said when he would go to Aniel. He could think about that tomorrow, for now. When Kaol returned to the castle, he went to her rooms, sorting through the contents of her desk. But there was nothing about that date. He checked the will she'd written, but that had been signed several days after. The silence and emptiness of her chambers threatened to swallow him whole, and he was about to leave when he spotted the stack of books half hidden in the shadows of her desk. Genealogies and countless royal chronicles. When had she brought these books here? He hadn't seen them the other night. Was it somehow another clue? Standing before his desk, he pulled out the royal chronicles, all from the past 18 years, and started back, one by one. Nothing. Then came the chronicle from 10 years ago. It was thicker than all the rest, as it should be given the events that had happened that year. But when he saw what was written about the date she had given, everything froze. This morning, King Orlan Galathinius, his nephew and heir Ro Galathinius, and Ro's wife Evelyn were found assassinated. Orlan was murdered in his bed at the royal palace in Orinth, and Ro and Evelyn were found dead in their beds at their country estate along the River Florine. There is no word yet about the fate of Ro and Evelyn's daughter, Aelin. Kaol grabbed for the first genealogy book, the one on the bloodlines of the royal houses of Otterlin and Terrasen. Was Selena trying to tell him she knew the truth about what had happened that night? That she might know where the lost Princess Aelin was hiding? That she had been there when this all happened? He flipped through the pages, scanning the genealogies he had already read. But then he remembered something about the name Evelyn Ashriver. Ashriver. Evelyn had come from Wendland, had been a princess of the king's court. Hands shaking, he yanked out a book containing Wendland's royal family tree. On the last page, Aelin Ashriver Galathinius's name was written at the bottom, and above it, her mother Evelyn's. But the family tree traced only the female line. The female, not the male, because... Two spots above Evelyn's name were written Mab, Aelin's great-grandmother. She was one of the three Fae sister queens, Maeve, Mora, and Mab. Mab, the youngest, the fairest, who, when she died, had been made into a goddess, known to them now as Deanna, Lady of the Hunt. The memory hit him like a brick to the face. That Yulemas morning, when Selena had looked so uncomfortable to be receiving the golden arrow of Deanna, the arrow of Mab. And Kaol counted down the family tree, one after one, until... My great-grandmother was Fae. Kaol had to brace a hand against the desk. No, it couldn't be. He turned back to the chronicle still lying open, and turned to the next day. Aelin Galathinius, heir to the throne of Terrasen, died today, or sometime in the night. Before help could reach her deceased parents' estate, the assassin who had missed her the night before returned. Her body has still not been found, though some believe it was thrown into the river behind her parents' house. She'd once said that Aerobin had found her. Found her half-dead and frozen, on a riverbank. He was just jumping to conclusions. Maybe she merely wanted him to know that she still cared about Terrasen, or... There was a poem scribbled at the top of the Ash River family tree.
as though some student had dashed it down as